All right, at this time, the chairperson is to briefly qualify. Requirements for chairing a meeting at Central Orlando Group Saturday night speaker meeting is 1 year of continuous sobriety. Have Central as your home group and attend a group conscious meeting, and I've done all those three. Plus, I was an alcoholic. Well, I wouldn't be here on a Saturday night. I would be downtown doing what I used to always do on Saturday night, if I wasn't passed out by now. And by the grace of God and the fellowship of this room and the good sponsorship, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't had a drink since June 28, 2004. For that, I am grateful. And now I introduce the speaker. Now, Susan, when I first come in this last time, Susan and I had the same friends. When we'd go to sober parties, she would always be there. And I always admired Susan, even back then. But the great thing about sobriety is that, you know, we don't grow apart, we just grow in our separate ways. And I don't see Susan as much as I used to, but I can always go to a meeting, and I never know when or where, but I know that I'll see her sometime. And that's how I got her to speak this month, is that I went to the group conscious meeting, got this meeting, and as I was sitting at the Fairbanks group, Susan come walking in, and I said, I hadn't heard her story for a while. So at that point, I asked her to speak, and of course, as all good AAers do, she said yes, and at this time, I'd like to give you Susan.
Good evening, family. Is this thing on? Can y'all hear me okay back there? I'm Susan Lair. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is February 2nd, 2005. College Park Triangle is my home group. We meet on Thursdays at 7 o'clock. Plug. And but this was where I started. So I have a great, great sense of loyalty to Central, and I love Central. My first meeting was here, July the 26th. 2004. Did I say 5 is my sobriety date? Yes. 6 months later, I changed my sobriety date. I'll get to why. It's not because I picked up another drink, but I had other issues. I still do. But I'm working on it, okay? And I know what they are. I had another maintenance plan going. And I think most of you know what that means. So I'm going to share with y'all what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. I haven't spoken at this group in 5 years, so hopefully I've cleaned up my story a little bit and my language, and I'll try to keep it general. I was 4 of 5 children. Here's what it was like. 4 or 5 children. I was the 4th daughter, and I have a younger brother. My parents divorced when I was real young. I never saw my dad that much. He was just never around. When he showed up, it was every 6 months. We never knew when he was going to show up. And he'd have presents, and he had money, and he had nice cars, and he had fancy things, and we just thought he hung the moon. And we were just a middle-class, average family. We lived in a little wood-frame home down the street from Granny and Granddaddy. I had a wonderful childhood, but I tell you that today. But when I first got sober, it wasn't so great. I didn't see it that way. You know, now I can look back and go, it really was pretty cool. I was very, very loved. But I wasn't very lovable. I was an angry kid from as long as I can remember. I was unhappy. I was miserable. My mother and father divorced when I was probably 5, something like that. And back then, I'm 50, so that's 45 years ago, and a divorced woman was a scorned woman in those days. Maybe it still should be. I don't know. It's not that big of a deal today. But my mother was very proud, and she raised us 5 kids by herself, and she raised us in the church, which I didn't like. And she didn't have a lot of help. She didn't have a lot of emotional support for her problem child. And I learned from a very young age that I had the ability to light up the room or darken it. whatever I felt like. And I can still do that today in sobriety. And I've chosen to at times. I'm not proud to say that, but I still know how to do that. I can be very manipulative. I'm working on it. But I don't know how I learned that. But as a small child, I learned that. But I also recall as a little girl, I would hold my breath. I mean, I was like 3 or 4 years old, and I very clearly remember this. I would hold my breath for a long period of time. Can you identify with that? By the way, you knew people back in the back? You'll be up to the front as soon as you get a sponsor. I was thinking about that. I was thinking, man, my sponsor makes me sit down front. And it's cool, though, because I always think the meeting's all about me, and I can stay focused on what's going on because I can identify, you know. But anyway, I'd hold my breath as a little girl, and I would hope that my veins would pop and that, that I would explode. And I remember thinking that clearly I'm going to pop and they're going to notice me. And they're going to come see me and they're going to feel bad for me and they're going to love me. And there was no reason for me to think that I wasn't loved by my mother, my siblings, my grandparents, but that's what I felt. Now I know what it was. That's what I felt. And I would scratch my skin up till it bled, and then I would pull my hair out by the clumpfuls. Freaking hurts to think about it, you know. I was annoying to my siblings. When my mother would spank me, that was back in the day too, that you'd get spankings at school too. I got a lot of those. And when my mother would spank me, I would scream at the top of my lungs, "Why don't you just kill me?" So the neighbors could hear me. And they would think my mom was killing me. And then they would come after my rescue. But today, you know, it would be child abuse. She wouldn't get near me with a paddle. But, you know, back then, I mean, I don't know what they thought I can't imagine anyone thinking anything ill of my mother. They just probably thought she had a crazy kid in that house. And the poor single woman with 5 kids. And she worked so hard. She's my hero today, but she was not for a long time. She worked so, so hard. She went to school. She worked full time, and she went to school at night. And my granny and granddaddy raised my brother and I pretty much. So we were the little kids, and my 3 older siblings were the big kids. And the little kids couldn't do what the big kids could do because they were the big kids, and they were perfect too. And they made straight A's, and they did everything right. And you know, my older sisters were the homecoming court, and they looked good, and they were smart, and valedictorian, and vice president of their class, and they were in the choir, and they could sing, and they could play the piano, and I'm like, I got a better idea. I'm partying. You know? Yeah, you guys are stupid, and I'm out of here. So I had an attitude for as long as I can remember, you know? And today my boss will catch my body language, and I really don't think I have that attitude look anymore, but I don't know. Maybe it's just really deeply ingrained. It's hard to change. It's hard to change. It's hard to grow up. I didn't get that book that my sister seemed to get, that Life's Little Instruction book on how to behave appropriately at any given moment. I had no discretion. I had no moral compass. I didn't. I do now. I had no boundaries. And it's like I had Tourette's growing up. If I felt like it, I said it. And the more it shocked you, the better I felt. You know? I would love to hang around the kids I was forbidden to hang around with, the ones that smoked cigarettes. And my sponsor says she thought smoking cigarettes got you pregnant. And I'm like, I didn't know that I thought that, but I think that's pretty funny. But smoking cigarettes was like kind of cool, you know, and so I learned how to smoke cigarettes at a young age, and at the age of 14, I guess I smoked something else. It was the first time I experienced something illegal. I guess drinking was illegal if you weren't 18, so I did that too. But I remember that feeling. I was at a football game, a high school football game. I didn't fit in with anyone, but I found these thugs to hang out with. And because I was never a thug, they were. I had a car, and it was my mom's car. But you know, still, it didn't matter. You know, her car was just always trashed when I got done with it. But we had some fun in the Orange Groves because I grew up in Polk County, Imperial Polk County, in Auburndale, Florida, which is a little redneck town between Winter Haven and Lakeland. We were home of the Bloodhounds, and we'd go out in the Orange Groves and we'd smoke, and I learned how to drink, and I learned what sex was, and it was just, I hung out at the pool hall at 16, and there was a pool hall down the street, so if I could hang out on the curb, with my friend Cindy at the pool hall. I was rocking. So I met this guy named Tony, and he had tattoos back then. I mean, that was like a divorced woman, you know. It's like, oh my God, he's got tattoos and it's really ratty hair, and a straw hat and a gun and a big truck. Big truck. Remember, I'm 50. This is like 30-something years ago. A big truck, some bulldogs in the back, and a shiny roll bar. And he, you know, he was selling stuff to all the local kids, and so I had met my man. And, he was great. Tony, I love you. And he lived with his mother, and she didn't... Does that sound funny? I don't think they were dating, but but you know, I am from Polk County. I don't know. So maybe so. But nonetheless, he could do what he wanted. And so Tony was my guy, and we hung out at 16 and until I quit school at 16 because I didn't need to go to school anymore. I decided to quit school. So I quit school and I went to Adult Evening High School. I didn't get a GED. I've got a high school diploma from Adult Evening High School. Does it matter? I couldn't tell you what I did there. I was so wasted every night I went. I met this cool chick named Frankie. And Frankie had the best stuff in town, and we just partied our way through night school. And by the time my senior year started, I had graduated, if you will. And my mother, gosh, she tried so hard. She tried to have a little graduation party and invited my aunts and all of them. You know, they give you luggage. Why do you get luggage for graduation? It's like, isn't that right? I don't know if they still do that today, but it was like luggage was the gift you get for graduation. And maybe it means now it's time to move. I'm not going anywhere. You know, but now remember, I'm dating Tony, and I'm working full-time in a print shop at 16 because I really wanted to go to work. I wanted to make my own money. So we'll fast forward a little bit. Tony and I, Tony gets popped for selling weed and to all the locals, and he goes to the Polk County Jail, Imperial Polk County Jail. And so we dated while he was in jail and planned our wedding. And this is great. So he's in prison, as far as I'm concerned, and he's going out to Saddle Creek Park, which is this little park in Lakeland, because he's on the chain gang, and he's going out to the park and he's cleaning up. And he carves our initials on a tree, and he tells me where he carved them so I could go down there and leave him some cigarettes and see the carvings. And I did, and he got his cigarettes, and he made me match sticks, you know, those wooden sticks. He glued them onto cigar boxes and made me presents while he was in jail. Yeah, it was really nice. I don't know where they are today. I don't have them anymore, but I do know they still sell wooden matches. And I have a school box with pencils. I guess I could do it myself now. When he got out of jail, I wanted to marry him in jail. I just really wanted to marry Tony. And my mom's like, my daughter's not marrying a guy in jail, okay? You can wait till he gets out. So we talked he talked the judge into, or I guess he got a lawyer finally and negotiated to get out of jail. He'll leave the county. And he's going to get married. So we got married at 19. I got married at 19. And under the condition, he leaves Polk County, so we moved to Apopka on his grandmother's property in a mobile home. And we had it was nice. It was brand new. We had us a nice little trailer. And I got a job, and we moved to Orlando, and I had arrived. This was a big city to me. My dad was from Orlando most of my life, so I remember as a kid coming to Orlando and being brought over here to Disney before it was Disney. You guys, I'm a Floridian. I'm a native Floridian, so I remember there was no Disney. We'd go to the preview center, and then you know, my dad would taught us how to, like, oh no, it was like, remember the parking would get full and they'd ask you to leave, but you have to go up there and turn around and go out. And my dad would go, okay, we're going to leave. And he'd fly in. So, like, I got it honest, you know, not being honest. I got it honest. My dad would, like, cheat everything. He would, like, stop his speedometers from working and roll his odometers back and, you know, stuff like that. I got that from my dad. I got good and honest. Anyway, nothing about my dad. We'll get to him. So I move up here with Tony, and I've arrived in the big city now because this was in the late 70s, and I got a job at a real estate company, and I met Rod. I was 19, he was 34. He was hot. And forget about Tony. Rod is hot. I'm in a big city now, and Rod had a problem. He was married, but I didn't care. You know, Rod was just cool. He was slick talking. I used to call him, I like the silver tongue car salesman kind of guys. You know, they were fast talking, and I love you. I love you too. Let's have sex. And you're pretty. Let's have sex. And anything. Want some sex? And it just didn't matter, because I was sure you'd like me if we did sex, or if I cleaned your house, or if I was good enough, or, you know, whatever it was. I mean, my dad was never around, and when he was around, he kind of instilled in us that you're from Polk County, you're never going to be good enough, you're never going to make anything of yourself, you're just some punk kids from Polk County. Your granddaddy loves to watch him change the mannequin's clothes in the downtown store. And so at an early age, I was never good enough for my dad. I was never going to be anything, and I had this guy thing problem. So I just decided and learned at an early age how to be really good at sex, something. So maybe it was sex, I don't know. and when I was 16, I also found out that I couldn't have children, because I had some girly surgery, and I found out at that age that I couldn't bear children. So I remember this, like, things come to me in clips. Like, I'm sitting in the hospital room, and the doctors are gathered around, and they're, like, ready to break the news to me, and they're like, you can't bear children. I'm like, okay, cool. Don't have to use birth control. Don't have to do this. Don't have to do that. And I could be free loving it, baby, because that's what I was all about. And it was just no big deal. It meant nothing to me. So I come to Orlando, and I find Rod, and he's 34, and I'm 19, and I'm pretty impressionable still, and so Rod's going to teach me a lot of things. And he did. And so Tony accused me of having an affair, and he was lying, and but I was, but it was different. He was just my friend, and, you know, long story short, I wanted everything I didn't have in everybody else's husband or everybody else's boyfriend or whatever it was. I wanted somebody else's stuff. I didn't want what I had. All my life, I remember being what we can define now as restless, irritable, and discontented. I didn't have a word for those feelings, but I know that I felt like I never fit in. I felt uncomfortable in my skin. I felt squirrely. I felt anxious. I felt stupid. I felt gawky. I felt lanky. I felt nerdy. I never remember feeling good about anything unless I was doing something for somebody else, mainly a guy, to make them like me. And I don't know what my thing is with the guys. Could be the dad thing. I don't know. It doesn't really matter. At Christmas time, I'd get money. At Christmas time, I'd ruin every Christmas I could ruin. I'd get money from my grandparents. I'd have boyfriends standing out front waiting for me to hurry up, come outside, and give my money. Of course I would. And then we'd go to McDonald's and hang out at McDonald's. And that guy, I still remember him. He's in prison. And he always, Danny. And you know what's cool? I look him up every now and then at Florida Department of Corrections just to see. Do you think he's cute? And I look at him like, God, guy's so disgusting. And I don't think we had sex, but you know what? I don't even remember. I don't think we did. But this is how meaningless that stuff was to me, how meaningless my body was to me, anything. It just, no, I don't even remember my first one. Okay, it was either Rex or it was his best friend. I don't remember. Gene or Rex. Don't remember. Doesn't matter. Didn't matter to me then. I mean, it matters. It matters now. I'd like to think I don't behave that way today. Sober sex is a really different thing, too, for those of you who haven't had it yet. It's really weird. Oh, my gosh. I've had it a lot, but the few times I have, I'm like, oh, feelings are involved. I've got to deal with them. Do I love you? But I know their names, and you know, I am a little more selective. So I never thought, you know, and promiscuous, yes. Today I can say I was incredibly promiscuous. A whore? No, just selective. And I was picky over who I slept with then. But that's really not the case. I care, but I didn't care enough to do something different. I felt bad about myself and ugly and dirty, but nothing that a good bath in a couple of days wouldn't heal. And then when I found liquor, alcohol, all bets were off, because it was the great escape, you know, and the great justifier, too. So I'm kind of jumping around a little bit, but I think you're following me. After I married Tony, we got divorced 9 months later. I remember that year we divorced, I moved 8 times that year. I had 8 residences that year. Needless to say, my mother's address was my permanent address. And she still has the same address. It was like last name in ink. After that, address in pencil, because it's going to change as far as where you can find me. After Tony and I split up, Rod finally left his wife for me, so I knew he loved me. Because he left his wife and his children for me. And we moved in together until I caught him cheating on me. And I couldn't believe he would cheat on me. But you know what? He cheated to get with me, so duh. So Rod and I are out partying, and Rod had some stronger stuff than alcohol, but primarily it was always alcohol, Smirnoff gimlets. And that's what we would drink. And I worked for this construction company back then. We'd drink our Smirnoff gimlets, and he had a few other choice items for us to ingest. And if they didn't work fast enough, we'd just pop another one. And by the time they started working, I got a little mouthy. And I remember clearly we were at the Gangplank, which is in West 50 at the Ramada Inn, drinking, and they asked me to leave. And all I wanted to do was go to the bathroom before I left. And they wouldn't let me go to the bathroom. So other patrons were coming in, and I remember standing out there going, this place is freaking stupid, get out of here. You know, I'm out there making a bunch of noise, and he's like, shut up. You know, and it was one of those, not that I deserve a pop, but I remember it being like in an old black and white movie when the woman's like, Mark! Oh, I'm sorry. You know, I mean, that's how I envisioned it. You know, I don't think he deserved to smack me. It was like, stop it! You know. Bud, let's go home. So we go home, and I found out the next day I had a broken jaw. I had a hairline fracture to my jaw. So I went to the work and with a horrible hangover, not to mention my mouth was hurting. And that day I went to the dentist, and he sent me to another dentist, whatever the specialty is, and he said, you had a hairline fracture to your jaw, so you need to be wired shut. I'm like, that's a first. Try it for 6 weeks. And so back then was the first Wendy's, and Wendy's has been around. That was when Wendy's was new, and I used to call it Hamburger Heaven. So I went to Hamburger Heaven, and I got a Wendy's burger, and then we go, when are we going to eat again? And so I ate my Hamburger Heaven, and I went and got my mouth wired shut. And then, I mean, I'm fearless. I have had lots of jobs, but I've lost a lot of jobs. But I have the ability to get another job. I'm a great salesperson. I can sell myself. I can look good on paper. And I had different resumes for whatever I was choosing to interview at. I'm like, this won't work. Yes, I've done retail sales. Yes, I've been in banking. And whatever it was, I've been able to get a job, not always keep it. Then they'd fire me, and I'd say, why are you firing me? So I know what not to do for the next job. And they'd say, it's just not a good fit. And they couldn't tell me why. Well, I was difficult, and I just had this air about me. I had an attitude, and you know, I can know today it was my alcoholism. It's not my drinking, like many of us. It's not my vision. My idea of an alcoholic was the person under the bridge, and that's what I grew up watching, those kind of movies. You know, the guy with the big coat and the paper sack under the bridge. Matter of fact, there was an old man that lived down, and he probably wasn't old, but when I was a kid, he seemed old. And it was called the center house room, where these old codgers would sit there and eat their beans and drink and bark at us kids, and we'd walk by. And they were like the drunks. Those were the alcoholics in my mind. You know, today I could sit on that porch with them and be buddies with them and identify with what they had to say and how they felt, because I know that today, but I didn't know what it was then. I lost my train of thought. Where was I before I went backwards? Where was I?
Jaw.
Oh, the jaw. Oh, yeah, the jaw. That was good. Thank you. So I was about losing the jobs and stuff. So now I'm out of a job. I lost that job for the second time. Same job, I lost it for the second time. And they rehired me. So I would go and interview with people. I'd call them up. We're fearless people, man. We will do anything. And we want a job, we want money, we'll do it. We know how to get what we want if we want it bad enough. At least I did. You know, and so I have a broken jaw, and my mouth is wired shut, and I call people up. I go, my name is Susan, and I'm looking for a job. I know I sound a little funny, I'm going to wear a job. I'm looking for a job. I'm a receptionist. That's what I did at the time. I'm a really good one, too. I'm not lying. It's just going to be 5 more weeks. I just have to talk a little slow this time. You're not hiring? Oh my gosh, I can't believe the stuff I would do in my... And then I tried to get back with that guy. Here comes Chet. And and you know, I couldn't do a whole lot with my mouth wired. I don't think I didn't try. Honey, I'm home. So, anyway. We can be very creative when we have to be. And I still wanted him to like me. It wasn't his fault that he hit me. It was like a movie. I understand why you hit me. Let me fix it. So that didn't work out. I caught him with Paul and we broke up again. You know. So I can go on and on. But I get a couple more, then I'll get sober. I remember one time... I got this roommate after that, and I'm a big cat person. For those of you who know me, don't offer me your cats. Please, don't come up to me. I don't want them. They find me. I'm a huge cat person, and I just love them. I live alone. I have 8 cats. My bed is Harry and Sandy. And but it's from cats this time, not men. Oh my gosh. And I don't know if it's not men because of all the cats, or because guys get a little nervous when they go, "You got a cat? That's nice. How many you got?" 8. And they're like, "Which cat lady?" I mean, it's really not like that, but you think what you want to think. So I was living with this girl, you know, I'd taken on this roommate, and I had this tiny little apartment, and she had a cat. And I could never have a cat growing up, except those center house rooms men gave me a cat once. And I was like, "Mommy followed me home," and she let me keep him for a while. Nonetheless, I was living with this girl, and she had this cat, and she's always complaining about the cat. And just to let you know how I think, you know, how I perceive things, I was like, she went on vacation one time, so I'm like, "I'll take care of the cat for her." I took the cat and had it put down. I know, horrible. But I thought I was helping her. I was really, really sick. And I won't do that to your cat if I ever sit for your cat. I promise. At 1 year sober, I got to babysit this girl's cat, who she was very, very new, a newcomer. Don't be afraid of me, newcomers. Good thing there's no new girls in here. And she went on a holiday, and I babysat her cats, and one of them died on my watch, but I didn't know he was dead, and he was under the bed dead, and she came back. And no, really, it's not that bad. I did not do it this time. I did not do it. But I was able to. She called me at midnight. She had a dead cat in her house, and I drove. I swear I didn't do it. It was the girl in 1984. I didn't mean to take her cat and put it down. I didn't do this to your cat. So I go over there and get the cat, and I took the dead cat to my house and kept it in the garage, and then he disposed his body properly at the vet for her. So I was able to show up, okay? And maybe that's my penance for killing this girl's cat. You know, I mean, I'm a serious cat person. And today they just keep showing up, and I can't tell them no. I have 2 cats at work that hang out at my desk at any given moment. And I have been 8 at home and 1 spare that shows up for food now and then. So right now there's 8. But yeah, that's my cat story. So when I found, so after Tony, after I got married and divorced, 15 years later I met Kevin. And you know, I've been partying a long time, and I just really thought that partying, I was just a party girl, okay? I never dreamt I might have a problem with alcohol. I mean, it was my solution, as it was for many of us, because there was always that stirring inside me that was yucky feeling. And when I drank, I was confident. I could talk you into having sex with somebody else, and because I didn't want to do it because I didn't want to be a whore. You were. And oh my God, she's such a slut. And then I'd tell everybody, she slept with Joe. Oh no, she's such a whore. And I was really messed up. And when I married Kevin, I met Kevin, and Kevin, like, I didn't know I had a problem, but I knew that I kind of acted up, like I acted up when I drank. So when I met him, he was buff, he didn't drink, and he looked good, and that was good enough for me. And so we started dating, and it took me like, and I thought, something inside me thought, if I get with this guy, I might straighten up a little bit, because he was seemed kind of square. And my family was all square, and so I'm like, I really need to stop drinking like I do at the pool. The apartment complex is all the pool. I know every great apartment complex in Orlando. I've lived in every end of Orlando. I know how to party at the pools. It kind of makes my stomach churn when I go to an apartment complex. I finally don't live in apartments, which they're fine. I mean, they're great. I could always get the best apartment, the newest carpet, the best location, and knew where the party was at the pool, because that was always a lot of fun. And they still go on. It's a weird feeling to go to the apartments and, you know, see people, and it's like there's always still going to be that feeling like we're having so much fun. And you know, I have to go that second, the first shot's not always correct, the next one is, that's not for you, and it might not be as fun as you think it is, because I end up going home with somebody at that pool and making a wreck of their lives too. So I met Kevin, and it took me about 6 weeks to get him to move in with me. I had 2 weeks to sleep with him, 6 weeks to get him to move in with me, 2 years to marry him, 6 years to get rid of him. I got him to drinking too, and we had a horrible, horrible marriage, but we looked good on paper. We had a nice big boat, I drove Lexus, we had a pretty house, we were a good-looking couple, and we did some really, really bad things together. When we drank, we fought. He wasn't a good drinker either. Again, I didn't know I had a problem. I just thought that once again I made a bad choice in men, you know, and he didn't straighten me up. It didn't work out the way I would have hoped it would have. And so when he caught me kissing a guy after a big night in the bar in the parking garage downtown Orlando, he got rid of me. And it was like, God does for us what we can't do for ourselves. I was in a horrible marriage. But you know, there's that part of me that goes, how am I going to get out? I really, really didn't know how I was going to get out. We were tied up financially, and we had all this stuff, and we had our money tied up, and I really thought, I'm never going to get free from this. This is what I've done with my life. This is the lot in life for me. And this one guy walked me to my car, and you know, of course, we had to make out to say goodnight, and he was hiding around the corner because he was jealous, and he caught us, and that was the end of the marriage. That was wonderful, but it was a horrible ending, but it ended. I got to fast forward a little bit. I got this job shortly after I met Kevin, and I work for an attorney now. I still work for the guy. He's an incredible friend. He's a criminal defense attorney, so I got both DUIs while I was working with him. The first one was when I was still married to Kevin, 1998. And he says to me, follow me. We've been drinking all night. He says, follow me. Don't go around me. So I got behind him, and of course I put the music on really loud. B.J. Thomas, gospel music. That's what I was raised on, you know, kind of Christian music, man. I was rocking and singing. I had the top back, and phew, went around me. Maitland police got me. And so I went to prison that night. And they weren't really nice to me. I thought it'd be really cool to go to jail because I worked in criminal law, so I'm like, this will be cool, now I can identify with our clients. Those criminals. And I was one of them. You know, I picked a fight with the jail lady and got thrown down, and then I was going to sue him for police brutality. And I sang Shackles on My Feet, Meow, Meow. I looked up at the video in the corner, and I said, send money, Mom. And I wiggled out of my handcuffs and knocked on the window and go, ha, ha. They made them tighter. They wouldn't let me go to the bathroom. You know, I laughed, and I cried, and I got mad and went through all the emotions that I do when I drink. And I love you. Hey, you let me out of here. I know a lawyer. I'm going to call my lawyer. I exercise my right to remain silent. Mom! You know, they're like, you know. That was my first DUI. 5 years later, and a few months after the 5 years, thank goodness, because 2 and 5 is bad. The second one outside of 5 years is a little better, if you will. I got another DUI. Same thing. You know, I work for a criminal defense attorney. I know how to act. I know what not to do. I did it anyway. You know, once again, Jack is on my feet. Give me some milk. Meow. You know, I'm a cat. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm crazy. Stop it. They psyche-valved me 3 times. You know, I'm like, I'd go in there and I'd be perfect. Right? Nothing wrong with me. The lady would say, you don't seem drunk. I know. I'm fine. Wow. Why are they sending you back here? They're crazy. They put me back in the cell. I'd act like a maniac. They send me back to psyche bound. I'm like, why do they keep doing this to me? My meds are in the car. And anyway, that was my DUI system story. So needless to say, my perception of the world is twisted, especially when I drink. A friend of mine had seen me drink a little over 6 years ago. And he took me to one of these meetings at this place right here in the little house. And I'm like, man, that is a nasty place. And I still feel that way about a couple of the meeting places. The chairs have cooties, and I don't want to sit on them. And I'm not sitting here with the people that look like the men in that center house rooms. And there I was in that room, and he knew I needed to be there. So I stayed and, you know, through the meeting. And the next time I showed up here, though, it was like the seed had been planted. And so the last drunk, I was with that lawyer, that wonderful friend of mine, who loved me more than I loved myself and could see more in me than I could see in myself and believed in me. You know, I don't know why I didn't lose my job. I deserve to today. I've been making some horrible mistakes, but he knows my heart, you know, and he knows who I am, and we have a long history. And it's amazing that we have the people in our lives that we do that love us and care for us in spite of how we behave. There was something about my last drunk. He and I had gone out and had some fun at the Hard Rock. And I try to keep up with him because he can drink. He's a heavy drinker. He's an alcoholic. Don't know. Not my job to decide that. But after I was throwing my bra up on the stage, he's kind of conservative too. You know, he's a really conservative lawyer. And he's like, oh my gosh, he's so embarrassing. I'm like, party, everybody. And so I'm up there doing my thing. And pretty soon, I vomit everywhere. I think it's time to go. So he pushes me out, and we start going down the people mover, and I vomit all over the people mover and the people's feet, and the security puts me in a wheelchair. And he pushes me out of the park in a wheelchair. And then when we get to my car in the parking lot, I crawl under the car. And I don't know why, but that's what I would do. I crawled under things. He'd take me to parties. I'd get drunk. I'd crawl under the car again and hide behind the tree, thinking my tail's not showing. You know, I'm like, my cats still do that. Every time they get under the bed, their tail sticking out. I just think of when I crawl under cars. I'm like, I see you. No, you're under there. Kitty, kitty. But it's okay because my cats are probably dry alcoholics. Sometimes I pull their tail. I can't help it. So I'm still in my own little world. But nonetheless, you know what I saw in him the next day? Remember, him and his family carried me and threw me in the shower, blah, blah, blah. What I saw in him the next day was the hurt that I couldn't fix anymore. I had said, I'm sorry for my behavior. And this is without drinking. You know, my whole behavior, my whole life has been just bizarre and unnecessary and over the top. And what I saw in his eyes that next day was the hurt that I couldn't fix. And what I wanted from my family, I wanted my family always loved me growing up. I wanted them to go away and leave me alone, and they wouldn't. They wouldn't let me go. They wouldn't stop loving me. They wouldn't kick me out. I wanted to go to a juvenile detention when I was a kid because I thought that would be cool. And when I ended up in jail, that was cool for 15 minutes. But they wouldn't stop loving me. But what I saw in this person who's loved me in spite of myself was the pain that I couldn't fix. And what I knew somewhere deep down that I'm going to lose a friend. I'm going to lose a friend. I'm going to have a job, but I'm going to lose a friend. And I'm not going to be able to fix this one. I said, I'm sorry. I won't do it again. I won't behave that way anymore. I swear this time I won't do it. I was just drunk. And I said it too many times. And I knew that I wasn't going to be able to do it without some help. And so I showed up here on a Monday, which Monday's a big day in Alcoholics Anonymous, after a powerful weekend of partying. And so July 26, 2004, I walked in the doors. Not before I circled the block a few times to get the courage to come in here, because I was sure y'all were all going to talk about me when I walked through the smoke of people. And it's horrible. It was horrible to walk in here. But nobody told me I had to, and I didn't think for a second that it'd be about not drinking. I just knew that I went to that one thing, and there was something about the drinking class, and I was just going to go. And I don't know what I was thinking, except maybe I learned how to drink like a lady, whatever that was. And Robin's not here tonight. She chased me out of the room with this book right here. They'll do that to you newcomers, so don't get away. So she was great. I hated it here. I remember coming in, like, anybody new in here for the first meeting? We all had to have the first meeting. I'm like, and of course I started crying. I don't know what they said, but I know that everything that was said in here, I could identify with the way the people felt about themselves, their body, their lives, everything. And it all completely made sense to me. For the first time, I've been in counseling, I've been to preachers, I've been to priests, I've been to everything I can think of. You know, I'm sure I've been prayed over and over and over. Yeah, I jumped out windows while my mom stood at the back door trying to block the door from me running away, so I dove out the window. You know, it's like there's nothing that could stop me. I was crazy. And I came in here and I heard what they said. For whatever reason, you know, I heard it. It was like I was ready. And then I thought, I can't drink. It was all good till I realized you can't drink. And then this girl, Robin, chases me out in the parking lot. And y'all are huggers and touchers and handholders, and you said stupid sayings. You still do. They're not as stupid, but you're still saying. She hold hands. Keep coming back to work, stuff you work at. Oh, my God. This year shall pass. Win, win, win. Soon, soon, soon. You know, that's all you get. You don't know when. Just it will. And so she comes after me. I'd come right at 12 and leave right at 1:01. And she came after me. Just take this book. And she writes in here, the journey has just begun. Thank you. And so, cause that's how you feel when you're new. You're like, really? I just want to say stop smiling. You know you're lying to sucks. And it's so true. And I remember, I don't know if she said it or who said it, but what helped me was they said, you don't have to drink today, you can drink tomorrow. That's the only thing I heard. You don't have to drink today, you can drink tomorrow. I'm like, oh, I can do that. Going to suck, but I'll drink tomorrow. So tomorrow, I don't drink today, I can drink tomorrow. And ask God to remove the obsession to drink. Whether you believe or not, just say, from here, it doesn't have to get to here, just right now it's right here. It'll get to here one day. Okay, remove the obsession. I don't have to drink, I can drink tomorrow. I don't drink tomorrow. Week later, I go to a party, everyone's drinking. Now everyone's an alcoholic because I've been sober a week. Junks, look at y'all. I got sobriety. I got me a book. I was sober. I stopped going to those parties right away. I don't really even have a desire to go to those kind of parties anymore. They don't really do anything for me. The stories are the same. I've been hearing them for 25 years. And after I've heard them once at the same party, they're still telling them 3 hours later. And I'm like, you are so incredibly boring. The food was good. I've got to go. So I always have my own car if I find the need or a reason to go to a place like that. But in the beginning, I always still felt left out of those parties, and I didn't fit in here. So it was a horrible feeling. It was awful because I didn't get the invites over there anymore, and now I was the square. And y'all were straight, non-drinking people who held hands and hugged and said all kinds of stupid things. One day at a time, just jump out, everything fine, think, think, think. You're like, oh, God, this is it. As my sponsor says, I'm at the Losers Club. I'm at the end of the street, and this is where I've landed. But you did look pretty good. I mean, we clean up pretty well. And, you know, we know how to have a good time. You know, and today, I know how to have a good time sober. I stuck around. I came to meeting every... I have good fortune in my job. I could come to a meeting at noon every day because my office is down the street. So every day at noon, I was here for 6 months. I was at this meeting every day. And this is where it all began for me. And people got to know me, and people liked me, and people didn't ask me to leave, and they understood my twisted thinking. It's still twisted. I don't always say it now. My thought bubbles don't always burst. But when they burst in here with you, and I can always find a head that goes, I know what you're saying. You're crazy. Or somebody will say, hey, coming back. I'm like, I've been coming for 6 years. What do you mean by that? You don't need to come back. So it really does work. There's life after alcohol. I'm here to tell you, I'm living proof. It's absolutely incredible. I drank for 27 years. I drank and did other things, mostly drank and sexed and drank and everything else even more. Now I can just shop more and do more things. I can obsess over anything. But I don't drink. And this last week, things weren't great for me. It never crossed my mind to drink. It crossed my mind that I wasn't going to drink. That's what crossed my mind. It was like, you know, I can think, your life sucks. I'm making a lot of really bad mistakes at work. I've been there 15 years. So, and I've been sober 6. And so I've got a little bit of the bank built back up with him, a little bit of the trust, not a lot, because I pushed a lot of buttons for this person, and I did a lot of years of hurting him. And I read in the big book the other day with you guys, 10 or 20 years of drunkenness. I don't know what the rest of it is, but you don't repair the relationships after 10 or 20 years of drunkenness. And I think that for us, we think, well, I'm sober, I'm okay now, why are you still upset with me? Why does that push a button with you? And, you know, because I can go back there in my behavior like that. It's so easy. But he does give me a break, and I'm very, very blessed. And the best gift I can give to that person is to stay sober. And when I make a mistake, to own the mistake and try to make it right. And I love my life today. Do I want to drink today? Sometimes I wish I could drink safely, whatever that is. But I don't know what that is, so I have nothing to, to compare it to. I don't know what it is. I've never been able to drink whatever safe drinking is. One's not enough. One Krispy Kreme donut's not enough. Are you kidding? So I'm not really right. The hot light comes on. You got to whip in, get a big old Diet Coke and a Krispy Kreme donut. Or the cream filled ones. I mean, really, for real. So if you don't drink one, you're okay. And I get the thing. The first drink will get you drunk. I'm like, shut up. It did not. It took 10. But it will get you drunk. The first donut will not stop at one donut. It'll be 15 donuts and a stomachache later. But it felt good at the moment. The first drink will get me drunk. If I don't take the first drink, I won't get drunk. Oh, I get it. So, if you're new and if you're not new, it's so awesome to have these meetings and these like-minded black sheep. We're all black sheep. But we're black sheep together. And I can look around here, and I saw her when I was first in. There's so many people that first saw me come in. And anywhere I go, I recognize people. I didn't have that in my phone before. I didn't have those kind of phone numbers. And, you know, I'm like, I don't know your last name. I don't know what a lot of you do. I don't really care. It's Michelle Central. It's Michelle College Park. It's Chad Young by the book. However you identify them in your phone. Sometimes you're in by the last name, sometimes you're in by the first name. I don't know, you know. It's just however I can remember them. And my fear now is like my Outlook messes up on my phone and I lose my numbers. You know, but all I got to do is go to a meeting and I'll find you. Isn't that cool? It's the corniest thing I've ever heard in my life, but it works. It works. It's the corniest life and it works. You have the corniest parties. They're fun, but they're corny. I'm not used to having a party with a Diet Coke and speakers on a car thing with just Diet Cokes and chips, but it's good, clean fun, and we know how to have fun. And I absolutely love my life, and I wouldn't have it any other way today. I'm a good daughter to my mother. All the heartbreaking I did, I call her every single night by 10 o'clock. Been doing it for years. Don't call her by 10:30. She's calling me. I'm in trouble. And I was going to do some work one time and go to the Ukraine, and I had the opportunity to maybe do some work with the orphanages. And at the end, I couldn't do it because the conditions were poor, and I wasn't quite ready for a trip that big. But primarily what bothered me was I couldn't call my mom every night at 10. And that's just a long way from where I came from. I didn't call her for weeks sometimes, and she worried about me. So I'll close with this. I'm out of time. Thank you for listening. Thank you, by the way, for having me come share with y'all. I love you all. I can look around and all of you. You know, we all have something to say, and when we can say it to each other, we all can identify with each other. And what I can, I was reading something today, and I just fell in love with it. And what I wanted to share with you in my close is that God didn't make any mistakes with any of us. We're all here, and we're all here tonight for a reason. When you think that I don't have anything of value to give, I don't know the big book very well. I'm emotionally bankrupt. I'm hanging on an emotional thread right now. Or you think I don't have enough faith? Think again, because our higher power uses our weaknesses, our limitations, to use us to go out and change the world and help another alcoholic in this situation. And in our weakest selves, we make a wreck of our lives and we get to come in here and get a do-over. What else can you ask for except to give it away? So, thank you.